You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan,
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on, Mike's on.
He'll get you the sports any way that he can. It's Mike Francesa on the Fan.
Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM WFAN.
All right, on this June the 4th, we come to you as always at 6 o'clock, brought to you by Casamigos Tequila, brought to you by those who drink it, as we take you up until 7, JJ at that time, Evan, from Evan to JJ with me in between. I actually talked to them today because I was driving Harrison today somewhere, and I heard them talking about these Yankee losses. I guess Evan has put together – Evan likes these lists, so he was putting together these lists of the worst Yankee losses of the last 25 years and, you know, how they impacted people and this and that. And I chimed in with the one that I actually felt was the worst. And the only reason I made it the worst is I felt for one game it was the worst, having to sit through it with everything on the line, being three outs away from winning the World Series in what was as dramatically staged a World Series as we will ever see in the aftermath of 2000, of what happened in 2001 and everything, and then to have that World Series and have everything that happened and then have a lead in the last inning, Mariano having blown away the Diamondbacks in the bottom of the eighth as he did the middle of the order, and then giving up what he gave up in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Yankees go on to lose. But they brought up a lot of other ones, including, you know, the historic loss to the Red Sox. But that was not one game. Games four and five were excruciating. You could see the handwriting on the wall when they came back. Their pitching was in complete disarray. They did not have any starting pitching left. And the Bloody Sock game in game six, and then the Avalanche in game seven, where I had to sit there behind home plate for nine innings, Eddie on one side, Dog on the other side. Eddie being a lifelong Red Sox fan, Dog just wanted to needle me for nine innings and sit through a game that was 8-0 in the second inning. And as I've mentioned to you many, many times, I sat there for the entire game and watched as the stadium seemed to, with each passing inning, have people leaving and new people replacing them, to the point where it was mostly in the lower deck Red Sox fans by the time the game was over. And the Yankee fans had long since departed. I stayed for the entire game, which was 8-0 in the second inning, if you remember. And it was a, you know, there was nothing to be brokenhearted about. You knew long before the last out that it had really fallen apart. Really, it fell apart in games four and five. What happened in the ninth inning of game four, after their 19-8 battle. And I didn't tell this story on the air. I've told it on the air before, but I didn't tell it to these guys today with Evan and JJ. And JJ will follow me today at 7. But my wife, Ro, and I were in Boston for the Saturday game. And we left Boston at about 4 o'clock in the morning, because I had to do the NFL show on Sunday morning, which is why I was not in Boston. And I had to do Mic'd Up Sunday night on NBC. So I was not in Boston for game four. And we got a couple hours sleep, and I set the alarm for us to get up and just drive back, and she could sleep in the car on the way back as I was going to drop her off and then go do the show on Sunday morning, the football show. And I got in the car around 4 o'clock, left the hotel. And at that time of night, it's not going to take that long to get back to New York. And especially into a Sunday morning. There's no traffic, obviously. I'm listening to the Boston station, and the fans are on, and this is after the Yankees clubbed them 19-8 in Game 3. So the Red Sox are now down 3-0, and you hear the Red Sox fans all night for a steady procession all the way back to New York. We'll never beat this team. We don't have what it takes to beat this team. We have a bunch of guys who are goofballs. They wear beards. They do this. They do that. They are, you know, they are just, you know, they're completely disciplined. They are in great shape. They're motivated. They're like, you know, they're like U.S. Steel. They're just precision, and they do everything right. And blah blah blah. Well, never in our lifetime, I'll never see them get beaten. This is a steady stream of this all the way home that night, into the morning. And that night, I do the show with the Mic'd Up show. Now, I'm in the viewing room where we sat before we went on the air right after the news. We used to take the throw live from the Sunday night news and do Mic'd Up. Well, it's about to start the ninth inning when I go on the air. So I said to Jim Bell, who was a diehard, you know, Red Sox fan, because, you know, it's, you know, he's misspent youth, I guess. But really, he went, you know, went to school at Harvard, so I guess that's the reason why. But he was a big Red Sox fan, and I said, just tell me my ear when the Yankees win, you know, because I'm figuring we're starting the show, and no one's watching us. They're all watching the Yankee game, but at least they'll turn over as soon as, you know, we'll get some fans turn over to get the reaction as soon as the game ends. And, uh-oh, we know what happens. They tie the game up. Now, he and I sat there and watched for hours afterwards until the game was finally decided, long after I went off the air. Then the next night, we know what happened. And then back to Yankee Stadium for Game 6 in the bloody slot game with Schilling. And remember, Schilling had gotten traded to the Red Sox, had wanted to come to the Yankees. And they couldn't get, you know, the Yankees never took it seriously. He did want to go to the Yankees, though. Yeah, he actually sent message to Dog and myself that he wanted to go to the Yankees. So that Christmas, Dog gets me a Christmas present, which states it's Schilling's new Red Sox jersey, and what he writes on it is, "Merry Christmas. Wait until 2004. You ain't seen nothing yet." And of course, what happens in 2004? So we lived through that whole event, and then you think about all these different games. You know, the losses to the Angels. Everyone wants to bring up the recent losses, but let's be honest. The recent teams have never reached the level of where they were, you know, markedly better. You know, when you go back to those days, we had gotten very used to those teams winning, as they did year after year with just, you know, incredible precision. You know, winning in 96, winning in 98, winning in 99, winning in 2000, winning all those World Series games, 14 World Series games in a row. Think about that now. Think about that now when you think back and realize that team not only won 4 World Series in short order, but and 3 in a row, but won 14 straight World Series games. I mean, that team was a dynamo. And then the great comebacks, the Brocious home run, the Tino home run against the Diamondbacks. And then flying out there for, which I had mentioned the other day because somebody brought it up. I don't know how it got brought up, but I mentioned how sitting there for game number 6 and, you know, Andy getting pounded and the game being just incredibly lopsided, then having to go through doing the show there Sunday morning, getting up early when no one's awake. It's pitch black in Arizona. Going to do the Sunday football show early in the morning and then going back to the stadium for Game 7, doing a show back to New York before the game and then having the lead. Mazzilli giving me the, hey, no problem, as the, you know, bottom of the ninth, go to, as Mariano comes prancing out, and then to have what happens, happens. So you think about that. And let's be honest, since 2001, they've had a lot of bad losses. They really have. I mean, this is a franchise that's had nothing but success, and again, had success in 2009, but it's had a lot of bad losses to the Angels, bad losses to the Tigers, you know, recent losses to the Astros, throw in some losses along the way to different teams. But the Marlins wasn't fun in 03. What got you in 03 was we never took the Marlins seriously. After the Yankees win game 7, I said this afternoon on the show, talking to those guys about how Dog and I walked through the building before game 4, and the people in the Marlins' offices, and we walked, cut through the offices to go out to do the show, and they're like, at least we won a game, you know, you guys are so much better, blah, blah. You're like, yeah, you know, don't worry, keep a stiff up, maybe win one more, you know, being generous to them, maybe you win one more, and at least it'll go 6 games. And even when the Yankees lost game 4, which they shouldn't have lost, but then game 5 with Wells in the back and Contreras and everything that went on in that game, and then, of course, the shutout in game 6. So, you know, no one expected that one either. No one. The 0-1 was a terrible loss. Then 0-3 was a bad loss. Then 0-4. And since 0-4, nothing's been the same, obviously. It's been a different feel, a different team, nowhere near the success. And, yeah, 0-4 changed a lot of things. It really did. And thank God for 09, or it would be a very, very long drought, as we know. All right, each day we do the stats for Mickey and Bernie as we look at the date in baseball history. We will till the baseball comes back, if it ever comes back. Bernie, 6'4", 2001, 2-for-3, a couple RBIs, hit a 7th home run as the Yankees beat the Sox. Bernie wasn't off to a great start, 722, 269, but it was a home run off Pedro, as a matter of fact, in that game. And then for Mickey, it was 1953. 1953 for the Great Mantle. And how about this lineup? You know, you look at some of the, you know, that's in the throes of the Yankees winning year after year, winning in 48, 49, 50, 51, 52. You know, having the great run of success that they have in a row, winning from, they won a 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 5 straight times, which is an incredible run. And this turnover in those years from the great DiMaggio to Mantle. But here's the Yankee lineup as they go to 30-11 and beat the White Sox. Billy Martin batting first at second base. Joe Collins playing first base, batting second. Bill Renner. Bill Renner really only played 1 year for the Yankees. And that was this year. He was batting third and hitting .300 at the time in left field. Mickey in center. Mickey went 3-for-5 on the day. His batting average after the day was .333. He had 3 hits, 2 runs scored, and 4 RBIs. He hit a home run off Billy Pierce. And on the season, he had 7 homers and 35 RBIs. He was batting .333 with a .433 on base percentage. Behind him was Hank Bauer in right field. Gil McDougall at third base. Charlie Silvera was catching. Yogi got the day off. Scooter was at short. And Vic Rashi. Vic Rashi was on the mound. So that was the Yankee team. Allie Reynolds won the game in relief of Vic Rashi that day. It was his 5th win of the season. And again, you know, you look at these guys and, you know, you some of these guys and you think about, hey, what about this guy? What about that guy? And in 53, you get a name like Billy Renner. And if you're a Yankee fan, a younger one, you've never heard of Bill Renner, okay? But if you're even an older fan, you might not remember the name because Bill Renner didn't have, you know, didn't have much of a career with the Yankees, to be honest with you. In 1953, it's the only year he plays for the Yankees. He plays in 120 games. That's it. Hits 2 homers and 13 RBIs. Actually hits .314, so he's in the lineup. He's batting in front of Mantle. Then he went and played for Philadelphia in 54. He played in Kansas City in 55, 56. Then he went and played for the Red Sox for a couple of years, was on their bench, and that was it. 6 years in the major leagues at 28 lifetime home runs. Okay. Bill Renner. But if you look in that year, it's the second time he was a big right-handed hitting outfielder, 6'3". And that was a couple times he was in front of Mantle that year, and he did hit 300 for the season. That's the second time he's batted in front of Mantle in the season in 1953 that we've seen. So sometimes you hear these names from the past. A lot of other stuff going on. The NBA, not much out of baseball new today. A lot of guys doing mea culpas about certain things they've said. And I don't know why during this time of the things that are going on in the country, why people who just feel like they have to say something. I don't know why so many players feel they have to say something. And you got a couple who didn't recant it today. Obviously, Drew Brees has recanted what he said and apologized. And Drew Brees has done a lot of things for the city of New Orleans. He's done a lot of stuff for the folks in New Orleans. He's done a lot of charity work down there. So I would think they would look at the body of work and cut Drew Brees some slack. I think they will. He already has apologized for what he said. He said he didn't mean for it to come out the way he did. And then you have Jake Fromm, who should know better. He's a baby quarterback just coming into the league. I mean, come on. Go play for a while. When you get good, you can talk. No one needs to hear about your comments about what's going on in the world when you're basically a kid just entering the NFL and not even entering as a starting player. I mean, you know, hey, you got a lot of work to do before anybody wants to hear from your opinion or needs to hear your opinion. You know, if you're a player of some note, you might feel like you need to weigh in. Even then, I don't recommend it. But you got it from a rookie player and then obviously a Hall of Fame player there, as a matter of fact. Back after this. All right, we're back. You know, somebody asked me about this, so I want to give them the answer. And I guess I don't think it's going to be a popular answer for them. But they asked about, since they know NBA is not going to finish the regular season, what happens to their total bets for the season, their over-unders? It will be, if you bet with, in Vegas, let's say, or with one of the local sports, you know, online places, FanDuel, DraftKings, FanDuel, any of those companies, the other ones too, you know, MGM, whatever, it will say at the top of your slip how many games have to be played. A couple of companies stated that they had 75, which I had never heard of before, because the ones I've always seen in Vegas and the ones I've seen posted on websites have 81 regular, 160 games for the Major League Baseball and 81 games for the NBA. Now, they said some have 75 for New Jersey. I have not seen any of those slips, so you check your slip. Here's one, though. If you have won already and you think, well, I already won, so what's the difference? You don't get paid. I know if you think if you lost, hey, I still have a chance. Even if you don't have a chance, you don't lose. So even if your team had, if you bet an over and they still had that many more games and they still wouldn't have won, which would be you did a pretty lousy job picking the team, it still doesn't matter. You're not getting paid. Now, the one you need to question on is if the one has already won, if you have a losing bet on that one, because a couple of places did say that if you already won, they'll pay off on the one you won on, but that if you lost, they expect that you're not getting your money back. I had not heard that before. That's not the way it's done in Vegas or anything, and not the way it's ever been done in anything I've seen. It stipulates 81 games. I've never bet hockey over-under, so I've never looked at hockey. 81 for NBA, 160 games for Major League Baseball. So look at the top of the page to see. Now, if you bet a team at odds, like if you said, I bet this team at 8-1 or 20-1 or 50-1 to win the NBA title, if they're playing, that bet's probably still good. Win or lose, that bet's probably still out there. So you might have saved money if you lost the bet this year. You might have lost money if you were going to win a total this year. Nothing you can do. They're not finishing the season. And again, check on those ones about 75 games in New Jersey, because I had not heard that before, but there was a couple of places that I saw it printed that they were paying off on 75. Now, you're not going to get to 75. I don't think any team is getting a 75, even with 8 more games. I don't think they're getting a 75. Maybe one team might. I don't think that's the case, though. But just check it out one way or the other just to make sure. But you probably save money if you were losing, and sorry, it's bad news for you if you were winning, because you're probably not getting paid. That's just the way it goes. I mean, there's not much you can do. Now, the NBA 22 teams, as you know, probably going to start on the 31st and be finished by October 12th. That's the plan. So that's where we are right now, 13-9 for 22 teams. I know you hear these nicknames. I hear there might be a couple more names than the names you've just heard mentioned. I would consider Mike Woodson a long shot. Obviously, you've heard the names of Atkinson and, of course, Thibodeau. I hear there's a couple more names involved. But Woodson would surprise me. Thibodeau obviously would be the guy with, and again, I'm sure there will be a couple more names that will show up in the next, you know, matter of time before we get that all settled. So that's where we are. All right, let's squeeze some calls in here. As we told you, we'll be here until 7 o'clock. So we got some time for some calls in baseball. There's nothing to talk about right now. Listen, they're going to make another run at this. They are still a very good way apart, though. So it's not like they're very close. They're not very close. I do think they'll take a couple of runs at this, but who knows where they are. Anthony in Middletown, what's up, Anthony?
I heard you talking about, I'm not a Yankee fan, but I heard you talking about Bernie the other day. I just had this question. I was wondering what you thought about it. If I can give you two of these three players for that run, who would you take, Mariano, Jeter, or Bernie?
One more time.
So during that run, if I can give you two of these three players to go with, would you take Mariano, Jeter, or Bernie? Out two of those three for that run.
Who are the most important? The most important players during that run are Rivera and Jeter on that team. They're the two most important players, and then would come Bernie. And probably
you would have Jeter over Bernie. I figured you
yes.
Definitely take Mo.
No. I listen. Jeter's the better player. So day in day out. I mean, I'd rather. But I'll tell you right now, I'd take either one of them at the plate. They're both very clutch. They both were very good in big spots. They both were very good postseason hitters. So I'd like either one of them up at the plate in the postseason. The most important guy in that whole run was Rivera. The other one was Pettit. He was very important. Very, very important. Yeah, but I would put Mariano's the most important, though.
Do you see Cullen getting back into the mix or no?
One more time?
Do you see Cullen getting back into the mix or not really?
I can't. Who are you talking about?
Steve Cullen, the owner, the potential owner.
Oh, Cullen getting back into the mix. Oh, as far as buying the Mets?
Yeah.
I think there's a possibility, yes. I have not heard anything, but I would not be surprised, and thanks for the call, I would not be surprised if Steve Cullen got back in the mix. That would not surprise me. I think I've heard that the team is still for sale, that the plan is still to sell the team. It would not surprise me if Cullen got back in the mix, and he's obviously got well more than enough money. As a matter of fact, he'd be probably the richest owner. I mean, his fortune is considered to be up in double, more than $10 million. Anytime you're going up there, I mean, first of all, $1 billion is a fortune. Anytime you're going over $1 billion, it's an incredible amount of money, but his fortune is considered to be over $10 billion, somewhere around $13 billion, I believe. Mac in South Plainfield, what's up, Mac?
How you doing, Mike?
It's good, Mac.
An honor, and I love those 1950 lineup descriptions. I really love that. The reason I'm calling is there was a debate earlier on the Fan about the legitimacy of the baseball season. If it's 50 games or something like that and the Yankees are in it, then it's legit. but if it's the Pirates or the Royals, it's not legit. It drove me crazy. I'll admit, okay, I'm a Mets fan. But
That's utterly ridiculous. There is no legitimacy to a 50-game baseball season. That is the equivalent of playing a 25-game NBA season. There is zero legitimacy to a 50-game regular baseball season. Zero. They might as well not even do it. They might as well just play the playoffs. Just have an extended playoff, have a double elimination playoff for the whole time, and let everybody in. They're better off doing that than they are playing a 50-game regular season.
I agree. What drives Mets fans crazy is when you hear someone say, but if the Yankees are in it, and they're in it, maybe playing the Dodgers, then it's legit.
That's just silly.
Been in the World Series in 11 years.
No, listen, the Yankees don't give anything any more legitimacy than anybody else. Plus, the Yankees, hey, listen, it's been a long time between drinks. It's been a long time. Hey, listen, this has not been, you know, the Yankees, when you realize they've won one World Series in 20 years. It's a long time. One. Thank God they got that World Series in 2009. There would have been a lot of, and thanks for the call, Mac, there would have been a lot of different careers if the Yankees had not beat the Phillies in 09. That World Series is so meaningful on so many careers. From Cashman to Girardi to players to so many guys, how much that meant to A-Rod and what A-Rod did in the postseason that year. I mean, it changed a lot of things, and it also took a lot of pressure off guys who came that year and won immediately. You know, you had a whole bunch of them that came that year. It was a changing year for the Yankees, and they won immediately, which took a lot of pressure off everybody. Richard in Manhattan, who's always got something crazy for me, what do you got today?
Mike, the worst Yankee loss in the history of their franchise.
We're not talking about history. We're talking about the last 25 years. So we weren't talking about history.
64, and I can expand on
Well, that. 64 is not 25 years, though.
Game 4, and it was Mickey's worst game ever, with all due respect. They won game 3.
No, it wasn't his worst game.
2 games to 1. Al Downing's pitching
great. Pitching great. He gave up 4 runs in the first inning.
No, Downing didn't give up 4. Roger Craig gave up the Sudeikis gave up the 3 runs to the Cardinals.
They gave up a grand slammer in the first inning.
No, the grand slam was in the 6th inning. Al Downing's grand slam off Ken Boyer. But the Yankees scored 3 runs in the first. They didn't have to take.
Oh, that's it. The Yankees scored first, then he gave the grand slammer in the 6th inning. I remember there was a grand slammer by Kenny Boyer. I remember the Kenny Boyer grand slammer. But how is that Mantle's worst game?
Trying to stretch a single into
so
the
what?
And then in the third, he got picked off second base with first and second. Now, in the top...
How do you declare that that's the worst game you played in 20 years? See, that's what I mean about you saying crazy. But that doesn't make it his worst game in 20 years. I mean, come on.
Okay. Now, the Yankees had a 3-0 lead in the 6th inning. One out, first and second, the Cardinals. The Grote hits a ground ball to Richardson. He can't get the ball out of his glove.
All right, so what happens? And they gave up a grand slammer. So I remember, yeah.
Richard.
You can't go back and spend all this time on a World Series that is that long ago, okay? But you know, but again, it's too long ago. It's too long ago to go. Richard, and thanks for the call, but here's where you're a wacko. It's game 4 of the World Series. The Yankees are up 2-1. That game didn't cost. How is that the worst loss in 50 years of the Yankee baseball? That game didn't cost them the World Series. They're up 2-1. On Saturday, Mantle wins the game with a home run. All right, with the home run of Barney Schultz. They're up 2-1. How is that the worst loss in Yankee history in 50 years when it makes the series 2-2 in a series that goes 7 games? Yankees can win game 5. They wind up losing it on a McCarver home run. They win game 6, so they're in game 7. Once you're into a game 7, hey, anything can happen. How are you going to call game 4 up 2-1 the worst game in 50 years? That doesn't make any sense. How is that worse than losing the Pirate game in Game 7 to the Pirates when they were so much better than the Pirates losing Game 7 to the Pirates in 60? Or even losing Game 7, 7-5 in the series in 64? Or going down, having a lead in the ninth inning in 2001 in Arizona, having the lead with Mariano on the mound in the ninth inning, three outs away from winning the World Series with Mariano on the mound, facing the bottom of the order, and you lose. You got a lead in the ninth inning, you're three outs away. How are you going to compare that to what happened in Game 4 of the 64 series when they're up 2-1? That's crazy. And about, I'll tell you right now, Mickey had a good series. I don't remember. I remember the runs in the first inning. You're right, the Yankees scored first. And then Al gave up the grand slammer to Kenny Boyer. And they lose 4-3. I don't remember Mickey getting picked off in the game, I have to admit. I remember a lot of plays in that series. I don't remember him getting picked off in that game. I'll have to go back and look at that. That he got picked off twice, I have to see if you're right about. But I don't remember him. I don't remember that game. Anything about him in that game that stands out to me? In that it was a Sunday afternoon game. I know that because Saturday afternoon, it was a rainy afternoon. He hit that home run off Barney Schultz as I was watching. Sunday afternoon. I remember it was an afternoon game. There's some parts of that game that I might have missed or something because I don't remember that game as well. The Monday game, I got home from school. I had to go to school. Game 6 was a blowout for the Yankees. Mantle homered, Maris homered, Pepitone homered. And then Game 7 I remember well. But I don't remember the Game 4, inning by inning. I know that he gave up a grand slam to Kenny Boyer. I'll have to go back and look at the base running gaffes because I don't remember those off the top of my head. Back after this. All right, we're back. Let's see. Let me get some more calls in as we take you up to 7. JJ coming up at 7. John in Fairfield. Go ahead, John. What's up?
Mike, what's going on?
What's happening?
I've heard your comments before about what Jake Fromm said yesterday. I was floored to hear those comments, but it actually... My point is,
when you got a rookie... Keep your mouth closed. I mean, you're coming into the league. Why do you throw yourself? I'm not even going to examine his comments, but why would you, as a young guy like that, entering the NFL, throw yourself into the middle of this stuff?
I agree, but it turned out it was a private text message from 2019. It's not like he said it yesterday. Like, I guess it was a text message with somebody, and I guess the person revealed what he had said.
It was depicted that he said it yesterday. That was the way it was relayed in the story, was that he said it yesterday.
It came out yesterday, but it turned out it was actually from...
Well, whatever. I mean,
no, I agree with you.
And why make an inflammatory statement like that? I mean, he's a young kid. You want to say, listen, he hasn't figured things out yet. He's a young kid. He's just coming out of college. But you know what? You're still going to get held to your remarks. That's all there is to it. I mean...
Message or an old text message?
That I have no idea. You know what? I have no idea where it came from. And he apologized for it. Now, and thanks for the call. He didn't say anything about that it was old or anything else. He just said he shouldn't have said it. He said it wasn't meant the way he said it, but that's what you're always going to say afterwards. So it's just, when these things happen, as a young player, there's no reason for you to get involved. There really isn't. Look at what's so many times players have to come back and apologize for statements they make where nobody asked them to make a statement. It wasn't like they were asked a lot of times. There are times they go to leading players and ask them their opinion. When you are, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Tom Brady, et cetera, they're going to ask you for your opinion on things. And you have to learn how to make sure that you were very guarded in your comments and realize that, you know, you always don't have to make a controversial statement about everything that happens. But if you're a young player like a Jake Fromm, I mean, I don't even know why. Now, again, you told me something I didn't know, that the statement was an older statement. I wasn't aware of that. I did not see that anywhere. I just saw him and his apology. And his apology, he didn't really get involved. He just said, hey, you know that... He just said, I shouldn't have said it. I apologize. It's not what I meant to say. It didn't come out the right way. I apologize for the comment, and I hope I didn't offend anybody, was basically what he said. Scott in Bayville, what's up, Scott?
Mike, great job as always. And truthfully, as eclectic as Richard is, I enjoy his looking back.
he's a little, but I mean, there's Richard taking a game four of a 2-1 series and making it the worst loss in 50 years. They made the series 2-2.
Well, sometimes he's just trying to create radio.
Yes.
As a baseball fan, don't you think the lack of fans will have more of an impact in that sport than any other sport? The shot from center field with the people sitting behind home, the foul ball with the youngster catching the ball out and, you know, behind third. I think baseball is really going to suffer, and that's why there should be a rush to judgment to solve this. And it doesn't take personalities. It takes a great accountant to find the middle ground.
Well, it actually takes them to at least trust the process, where I'm not sure they can even trust each other. That's why I said maybe they need a middle ground, because they...
An arbitrator?
I don't think they will even agree to let an arbitrator... They wouldn't agree to binding arbitration because they don't want to relinquish power. And
well,
it's really to that
so
point. Right, they're both very powerful. The players beat them up for a long time, the owners. They never beat them up at the table. They beat them up in court is where they beat them up through the years. The players feel like the owners have gotten the best of them in the last 5 or 6 years, and maybe they have.
The richest people in the world, right? Your lawyers, your doctors. Well, maybe not your doctors. But
no, I mean, you're rich.
A lot of people are on commission. They get a portion of what they earn.
Well, listen, the players are clearly partners, but what they don't want to cede is that there is a risk involved in buying and in getting involved in any business, or having at least gained the ability to play in that game. If you're in the major leagues, now you were either fortunately born very rich or you made a bunch of money somewhere. If you're an owner who got into owning a team, you either made a ton of money or you were lucky enough to be born with a ton of money, because you had to come into this with a lot of money. Otherwise, you can't get in the game. So that's part of it. And I think there comes with that outlay of money, with that enormous amount of money that is put forward to buy the franchise and to run the franchise, and thanks for the call, there should be some income streams that are theirs. I have no problem with that. But then there should be a very fair revenue pool of which the players get half the money. And that's what has worked in most sports. And baseball just doesn't want a salary cap because of that's been how they believe from a standpoint of the union. They think that holds down prices, and they're probably right. It probably does hold down salaries in the long run. But it also makes it easier for teams to operate. Now, in most sports, they've gone to that. They're not going to that in baseball anytime soon. But right now, the biggest problem is there's just a tremendous contempt between owner and player. The players don't trust the owners because they think they lie to them. They won't open up their books, with the exception of the Atlanta Braves. And the owners feel that the pendulum has swung too far for the players, which it probably has, but that's because of the fact that if you go back to the days of Charles Comiskey and go back to the days of the Baron, you know, the Robert Baron owner, they basically screwed the players. I mean, these guys gave everything to the game and got not the only player who I think ever was able to demand things that no one else could get away with was Babe Ruth, because he was so intricate to the game being successful that he actually for a time, dominated the entire proceedings. Look at the amount of money he was being paid. Mark, go ahead, Mark. Mark, he's not there. Rich in Teterboro, what's up, Rich?
Mike, best free agent signing, pitcher signing, Britt Burns, Andy Hawkins.
All right, you're going to do it. Listen, don't do an impersonation. There's only one Richard. Sorry. Goodbye. Listen, just, I don't need Mike and Mayor Pack right now. It wasn't even a good impersonation. That's why I knew it was Mike anyway. See, I once he started doing the Richard, I knew it was Mike. But I always know it's Mike because he's been doing this for, 30 years. So I always know it's Mike and Mayor Pack. All right, now, Rich is going to come in with some crazy thing, and then Alan and Queens are going to come in with some crazy thing about the MVP. Go ahead, Alan. What do you got for me?
Carlos Santana is a better musician. Brittany Williams is a better
musician. Go ahead.
Than Carlos Santana and a better ball player than Carlos Santana.
Oh. That's it, Alan. I thought you'd have an MVP. You always have an MVP thing for me. I mean,
the worst game, Yankee game ever, was game 6 of the Arizona
season. You mean the worst? Well, no, you see, but no. We're talking about heartbreaking defeats, not the worst game aesthetically or the worst game played in terms of how badly one-sided it was. The worst defeat, heartbreaking defeat. That was not – game 6 wasn't the most heartbreaking defeat. They got a chance to win the next night.
Corey burnt out Stanton and wasn't hardly able to use him the next day.
Yeah, but that's – it didn't matter. He didn't need Stanton. He had Mariano on the lead. He had Mariano in the ninth inning with a lead.
And it didn't work.
Mariano made an error. He made a mistake. They had a broken bad hit and Mariano made a mistake. That's why it had nothing. Come on, Alan, come on. Thanks for the call. You have to do better than that. Come on. You have a lead with Mariano on the mound. Joe got the game exactly where he wanted to get it. He got the game to Mariano on the mound in the ninth inning facing the bottom of the lineup. What happens? Give Mark Grace credit for getting a broken bad base hit to start the inning. He was batting seventh in the lineup. He led off with a base hit. The bunt rolls up Mariano's arm, which leads to a big problem. And they get a couple of well-placed hits, including another broken bat. Now, listen, Mariano broke a million bats anyway. We know that. I mean, you couldn't count how many bats Mariano broke. But these were broken bats that led to a couple of bleeders. And away you go. That was what made that the toughest loss was from a stand. You see, sitting the four straight game loss after leading 3-0, which has never happened before, is the most devastating loss historically for the Yankees. But it wasn't about one game because the most devastating games were 4 and 5. 6 and 7, the Yankee pitching was already in disarray. You had Schilling, who was a great big game pitcher, pitching in 6. And then the Yankees, they didn't know where to go in game 7. They didn't really have any faith in anybody to start or pitch that game. And they wound up down 8-0 in the second inning. And you had to sit there and realize that this was over after 2 innings, which was very tough to take. So that makes it a little different. There's been other losses. But to me, the reason why of all the games I experienced, that 0-1 was the worst is because after he struck out the side in the 8th, you're facing the bottom of the order in the 9th with a lead in a classic 2-1 game, and you're figuring, okay, this great series has come down to the last inning. You would never want anybody on the mound except the great Mariano Rivera, and things didn't go right. The script didn't go right. It happens. That's why it was the most devastating. It really was, because you thought you had it won. When he jumped to the mound in the 9th inning with a 2-1 lead, what else would you want? You thought you had it won, and it didn't happen. It came down to 1 inning. Robin in New Canaan, what's up, Robin?
How you doing today?
Good, what's happening?
Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
Good, what's up?
Well, I told your producer I want to tell you a quick thing about Drew Brees. But to give me 30 seconds, I got to talk to you about that game you just were talking about.
Well, what do you mean? You wanted to talk about Drew Brees, but now you don't want to talk about him?
Oh, no, I want to talk about him because it's a great story. But you were off, and like a day or two later, I called Dog, and he asked about how much the pain was of that game. And I told him I was sitting in my house in New Canaan, family asleep upstairs. I ran upstairs at the beginning of the ninth to get my transistor radio so I could listen to Sterling call the victory. I never got to hear it.
No, never did. And more than that, it was the fact that he had been so thanks for the call. He had been so overwhelming in the we got to run anyway. He had been so overwhelming in the eighth inning. I was sitting right there. I was sitting very close to the dugout, and he had been so overwhelming in the eighth inning. And nobody in the stands thought none of the faithful thought they had a chance. They were like, oh, no, not him. You know, oh, no. The great Mariano, and now the Yankees, who had gotten so used at that time to winning World Series year after year after year, were going to put their stamp on another one. And lo and behold, it doesn't happen. And it was a long ride home, which probably made it worse because it was such a long ride home, you know. But it was, of all the one game, and I agree, listen, historically, there's nothing like 0-4 because, you know, you're up three games to nothing in a series to win one game and to have that happen once in baseball history and have it be the Red Sox to do it to the Yankees and finally the Red Sox win their World Series and change their baseball fortunes forever. And listen, the baseball fortunes have changed since then. There's no question about it. So it changed everything. So historically, there's no series more than that. But that was a culmination of games. It wasn't one shot to the solar plexus. It was a repeated number of shots over a period of games. That's what it was. And I give Francona great credit for keeping his team alive because a team that he had to get ready to play for Game 4 was so demoralized after Game 3 and so beaten. I remember the Yankees won Game 3 of that series 19-8. And then and after winning Game 3 to go up 3-love, 19-8, they lose the next four in a row. Very, very tough for that to happen. All right. JJ coming up next. It was good to talk to JJ and Evan this afternoon. They're the ones who came up with this thing today because they brought up all these games Evan did on his show, and JJ was on with him talking about it. JJ coming up in just a couple of minutes, so you got him coming up this evening. We'll see you tomorrow. Once again, brought to you, as always, by Casamigos Tequila, brought to you by those who drink it. We'll see you tomorrow on a Friday. Enjoy your evening, everybody.